Chapter 8, The Mind Reader Strikes. Jerry Webster often spoke of himself as Whiteside's best reporter, which Rick considered a fair description, since he was the only reporter in town. Of course, Duke Burrows, the editor, did some reporting himself, but that didn't count, since he carried the title of managing editor. "I'm a good reporter because I can sense a story," Jerry said to Rick and Scotty. "You two have that certain look that spells trouble. What gives, boys?"
"No trouble," Rick answered swiftly. "We just need a little help."
Duke Burrows glanced up from the proof sheets he was editing.
"When Spindrift needs a little help, there's always a story in it. We'll make a deal, won't we, Jerry? You give us the story, we'll supply the help."
Rick knew Duke and Jerry well, so it wasn't necessary to beat around the bush.
"No story, at least not yet. And I can't even give you a hint. Only we do need help."
"Two kinds," Scotty added.
"That's right. First, we have guests at Spindrift. Name of Morrison. You'll pick that up sooner or later, because Barbie is running around town with Janice Morrison. What we need is a promise that you won't mention it in the paper."
Duke's eyebrows went up.
"Aha! Trying to suppress legitimate news, are you? What do you think, Jerry?"
Jerry Webster stared up at the ceiling.
"I can see the headline now. Mysterious visitors at Spindrift. Lead paragraph. The mystery of strange visitors at Spindrift Island deepened today as members of the Scientific Foundation threatened the Whiteside Morning Record with drastic action unless the story was withheld. How's that, Duke?"
"Needs editing, but you're on the right track. What's the drastic action you're threatening us with?"
Scotty grinned.
"Adam," he intoned. "Editor and reporter drowned in own ink supply. Bodies found among leftover newspaper copies. Apparently discarded with the other waste."
"Too good for them," Rick disagreed. "How about editor and reporter assume new dimensions, rolled to paper thinness in their own press?"
"That's drastic," Duke admitted. "Seriously, Rick, you must have some good reason for asking us to leave out what could only be a small social item."
"It's a good reason, all right," Scotty answered.
"Only we can't tell you what it is, Duke."
The editor looked at Jerry.
"What say, can we take it on faith?"
"Too simple," Jerry objected. "We ought to get something in trade." Scotty made eating motions.
"Apple pie with homemade ice cream. Sunday night, said apple pie would be used to pack down a nice thick steak."
Jerry sighed.
"I'm tempted." "It's a deal," Duke agreed. "Make mine rare. And I add one thing. If there's a story, we get it first."
Rick looked pained.
"Don't you always? But chances are there will never be a story out of this."
"Must be a government deal then," Duke said knowingly. "Has to be. Okay, Rick, we'll go along. What's the second kind of help?"
Rick breathed a sigh of relief. He hadn't doubted that Duke and Jerry would hold the story, but it was always hard to ask a favor without being able to give the reason. "There's a new barber in Vince Lardner's shop."
"Think we're chumps who don't keep up with the news?"
Jerry asked, his expression disdainful.
"Of course there's a new barber. What of it?"
"We need some information about him. If you'll just let me see your notes, that should do it."
Jerry hesitated and Scotty grinned.
"Bet he doesn't have any notes."
Duke glared at Jerry.
"See, you've embarrassed the record. I told you to get the story on that barber this morning."
"Time enough later,"
Jerry retorted unruffled. "We don't need the dope until tonight, and I'll have it.
What kind of information do you want?"
Rick listed the points on his fingers.
"Where he came from, his full name, how he happened to get the job. I mean, whether he applied directly to Vince or whether he got the job some other way. And how long he expects to stay here."
Scotty had a few points, too.
"If Vince had a vacancy, find out how long he was looking for a barber and how he got this one. Timing is important, Jerry. Get all you can. Oh, and ask him a few questions about his massage machine, if it's inside. It looks like the hair gadgets that they have in beauty shops."
Editor and reporter stared at the boys curiously.
Why so much interest in a barber?
Jerry demanded. Rick tried to look casual. Why, one of our special guests might want a haircut, and we couldn't take a chance that the barber might not be government approved. Simple.
Duke Burrows tilted back in his chair and pushed the green eye shade to the top of his head.
I get the picture. He ticked off the points on his fingers, mocking Rick. Stranger's a spindrift, not to be mentioned. Government work of some kind, for sure, and pretty hot. So hot, in fact, that a stranger in Whiteside might possibly be a menace to the Strangers of Spindrift. Rick Brandt asks help of a local reporter. Gets name of stranger. Turns name and details into some government security officer for a check. How's all that?
Too good, Rick admitted. He had known it would be impossible to put anything over on Duke. The editor was a sharp cookie.
But keep quiet, please, Duke, will you?
You don't want anything we discuss never goes further than this office. All right, Rick. Jerry, get the dope. Hop to it, Hawkeye. Duty calls.
Jerry waved his arms dramatically.
Hold the presses. New barber in town. Here I go, after the story of the year.
He swept through the door and then made a sheepish appearance.
Sorry, forgot my pencil and notepad, he explained.
He grabbed them and vanished. Duke waved the boys to chairs.
It'll take a little while. Get comfortable. I have to finish this copy.
Rick and Scotty waited as patiently as possible. Scotty, the more relaxed of the pair, borrowed a copy of the style manual and studied it with apparent interest. Rick watched him, envious as always of his pal's ability to let time pass without floor pacing, nail chewing, or other impatient actions. Duke's analysis of the situation was pretty good, Rick thought, and it was based on very little real information. He supposed that the editor had the experience to draw on that most people didn't. But so did intelligence agents. Wasn't hard to see a few information leaks could add up to a pretty clear picture in an agent's head. Jerry was back a short time later. Apparently the interview hadn't taken long. He produced his notebook with a flourish and pounded on a desk for attention. The gesture wasn't necessary. Rick, Scotty, and Duke were waiting eagerly.
Luigi Collini, journeyman barber, Jerry read. Age 43, originally from Santa Lucia, most recently from Washington, D.C. 25 years experience, inventor of the Collini treatment for dry hair, which is the machine he has. Claims to have invented it 5 years ago while working at a hotel in Washington. Came to Whiteside because he prefers being near the shore. He's an ardent fisherman. Saw Vince Lardner's ad in the New York Times a few days ago and applied at once by phone.
What day and what time? Rick asked quickly.
Monday. Called about noon.
Scotty asked curiously.
How'd you get that information out of him?
Nothing to it. I told Vince I'd like to look up his ad in the Times because he claimed the ad plugged Whiteside as an excellent climate. Then I told this new guy he must have moved fast to get in his application, ahead of all the other applicants. He said he hadn't even seen the Times until he went to lunch. He called right away. So I guess the time worked out as Collini said it had. Vince said the ad had been running for a week, and no one else had applied.
Rick had been calculating.
Scotty, that means that Collini phoned after we left Washington.
He stopped quickly. Duke Burrows rubbed his hands in fiendish glee.
Aha! Giving away information! So you've seen this Collini before in Washington. No wonder you're worried about him, Jerry. I'll bet we can sell this information to some enemy for millions.
Scotty grinned.
Not unless you have the plans for the death ray. Only death rays bring millions these days. Why, it's getting so a spy can't even sell atom bomb secrets for more than a buck apiece anymore.
I guess you're right, Duke admitted crestfallen. Well, Rick, anything else you need?
Middle initial or name?
M for Mario.
Anything else?
Jerry asked with a superior air.
That does it, Rick consulted his watch. Let's go, Scotty. Time to pick up Barbie. I won't thank you two because you're going to get paid in steak and pie. See you later. At the home of Barbie's friend, there was another wait while Rick chafed. He was anxious to get home and phone Steve Ames. However, as it developed, Steve couldn't be reached. It was after dinner before Rick made connections. He gave Steve the information Jerry had collected and then asked, "Isn't this proof of something?" Steve chuckled. "It's proved that Whiteside has a new barber. That's about it. But it's certainly strongly presumptive, Rick. We knew about Collini moving before you called, and we're continuing to check on him. Meanwhile, I'll alert my boys at Spindrift and tell them to keep on their toes."
"I'll pass the word along," Rick offered.
"No need. I'm in touch by radio. Now I want you to do something for me. Dr. Marks is arriving at Newark by train at 6 tomorrow morning. Tom Dodd is with him. Can you pick them up?"
"Sure. How?"
"Suppose you fly to Newark and have Scotty drive over. Then you pick them up at the station by car and take them to the plane. If you fly them to Spindrift, no one will know that Marks has even arrived. Tom will try to make sure that no one is tailing him, and we'll help you lose any cars that might try to follow."
"We can do it," Rick assured him. "I can land close to the city. I've done it before with pontoons."
"Good. Ordinarily, I'd have an agent meet them, but my Newark man is in the woods with the Boy Scout group. Call me when Marks is safely with the team."
"Will do," Rick promised.
Rick reported the conversation to his father when the scientist came in from late work in the laboratory. Hartzenbrandt nodded wearily.
"Good. If Marks is on the way, that means he has answers we need badly to some of our mathematical problems."
"What I don't get is why he's coming on an overnight train," Scotty interjected. "That's doing it the hard way, because it's only a few hours from Washington to Newark. Why didn't he get a train at a decent hour? This way he'll spend most of the night sitting on a siding somewhere."
The scientist smiled. "I gather that Marks has definite ideas of his own. I wouldn't care to be Tom Dodd. I'm sure Marks is giving him considerable trouble. He's convinced the security business is a plot to inconvenience him and the other people on the project."
"Yeah, he didn't seem to have a very sweet disposition," Rick agreed. "Good night, Dad. Scotty and I are going to bed early, because we'll be up at dawn." It was really the first sound night's sleep Rick had since the invasion of Spindrift by Steve and the Morrisons. Later, he had to smile at himself, because it seemed to be proof of what Scotty had said, that the real reason for his uneasiness was inactivity. He admitted that the problem of the stricken team members intrigued him. He made no claim to be any great shakes as a detective, but trying to solve mysteries, whether scientific or real, was a part of him. Scotty departed first by boat a few minutes after dawn. Rick warmed the sky wagon and went in for a dish of cereal before taking off. He had plenty of time. Newark was only a few minutes away in the fast little plane. He timed it perfectly. Scotty was just rolling up to the pier near Newark as Rick taxied in for a landing. He got into a rowboat brought by an attendant and tied the plane to an anchor buoy. In a moment, he was in the car with Scotty. "We'll get some excitement now," Rick predicted. "Because Marks is arriving?" "Yes, and because the barber has come to town. If he isn't up to his neck in this business, I'll eat his hair oil on pancakes." Scotty shuddered. "You might at least wait until I've had more breakfast." Rick ignored him. "Also, the team is now assembled in one place. That means the enemy has a single target to shoot at." Scotty laughed out loud.
"You should see yourself," he said, chuckling. "Since we found the barber yesterday, you've been a new man.
Beaming and happy as can be. Now the enemy has a single target and you're pleased. Didn't it occur to you that the target is us, you simple meathead?"
"It did." Rick had to grin, too. "But who can locate the sharpshooter the best?"
"Why, the guy sitting on the bullseye."
Scotty parked and then walked into the station. A quick check of the bulletin board told them that the train was on time. They walked to the gate just as the train announcer called the arrival. Tom Dodd was one of the last off. He had two suitcases under one arm, and he was supporting Marks with the other. Rick and Scotty ran to help. Was the scientist ill? Scotty took the suitcases while Rick grabbed Mark's other arm. The scientist shook him off.
I'm perfectly all right, he said irritably. Confound it! Rouse a man at the crack of dawn and expect him to respond like a ballet dancer to a cue. It's all nonsense.
Mark's appearance belied his words. His face was drawn and pale, and it was obvious that his coordination wasn't very good. Tom Dodd was plainly worried.
Let go of me, Marks demanded.
He drew himself up and glared at the boys.
Which way to the car?
Straight ahead. Rick glanced at Dodd. Mark stalked off, but his steps were too careful to be convincing. He just wasn't normal.
He wasn't like this when we got on the train,
Dodd said in a low voice.
Let's get going. I'm anxious to get into Spindrift.
In the parking lot, Rick ran to open the trunk so Scotty could stow the bags. Then he beckoned to Marks, who was staring straight ahead, eyes glassy. This is the car, sir. Marks started for the open door, but instead of bending down to get in, he walked straight ahead, rigid as a robot, and his face slammed into the edge of the low turret top. Dodd caught him as he fell. Rick jumped to the scientist's side, afraid he'd been knocked out, and afraid, too, that something even more serious was wrong. Marks was not unconscious, but his stare was fixed.
Are you all right, sir?
The boy asked anxiously. The reply was unintelligible. Scotty bent over the scientist, too.
Are you all right, sir?
He repeated urgently. Marks' fixed stare never wavered. A spate of words poured out of him, but they made no sense. Now and then a single word emerged clearly. Once it was July, then soup kettle, and later Planck's constant.
Just like the others, Tom Dodd said helplessly.
Rick listened with horror. He had no doubt, no doubt at all. Steve had described it accurately, and here it was. Marks was a victim of the identical ailment that had struck the other team members.